This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Welcome back to The Fuel, the new business podcast, brought to you in association with The Advertist, the new business development platform for creative marketing and communications agencies. Referrals are a great way to generate new business, but what happens when you want to grow your agency or something catastrophic like a pandemic rocks your industry? You need a safety net, and that comes from having a pipeline of new business prospects that sit outside your normal bubble. The Advertist has all the tools you need to build a solid pipeline of new business prospects to protect your agency when times get tough. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com, that's theadvertist.com, for a free trial or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, we've got something very special for you in this episode, and we're bringing you the hottest news in the branding world with a big fat exclusive. But before we do that, let's cross over to our resident new business jester, Jeremy Davis, who's feeling a little bit tender.
Jeremy Davis!
If you want to make a business development person wince, look them firmly in the eye and recite the letters RFP. If you want to reduce them to tears, just ask them to talk you through the last tender they worked on. If new business is all about the thrill of the chase, tenders are more like the back office admin function that's behind every great hunt, dutifully providing the info and the supplies to enable the headline-grabbing hero to collar the quarry. Highly detailed. Highly intense, and very, very dull. The name tender itself is both a complete contradiction in terms and entirely fitting, depending on which sense of the word you apply. Honestly, is there a single word in the English language with more different meanings? I mean, I love a double entendre as much as the next saucy postcard-loving Brit, but there's nothing remotely sexy about a PQQ. That's pre-qualification questionnaire for the uninitiated. That's another thing about the tender process that you'll quickly learn. There are so many acronyms and initialisms, you'd think they wanted you to do the whole thing via text message. But to come back to those double meanings, you feel anything but tender towards them. But in another sense, the word tender is terrifically apt, as they do leave you feeling sore. I've pulled two all-nighters in my new biz career, and both of those were working solo on a tender. When Heather Small and M People implored us to do it all night long, I very much doubt that working on our PQQ was what she had in mind, but that's as rock and roll as my life gets. The first one was a PQQ for a Russell Group university, with the sort of timing that new business people and stand-up comedians normally only dream of. The agency had just introduced a new quality control system for pitches and proposals, which involved a review by the senior staff of every document before it went out. My first stab at the PQQ was the first to be subjected to this new process, so obviously everyone was keen to make their mark, and my document came back to me with more red lines than the Brexit negotiations. I wasn't in a position to ignore them, so set about rewriting the thing from scratch, and I was still going when the last of my colleagues left the office at around 9 p.m, at which point I realised that spending three of the last 12 hours I had remaining before the deadline for submission sitting on a train didn't make a lot of sense, so I called home, gave my apologies, and settled in for the night. At least I had control of the iTunes library for a change. One thing that always infuriated me was that when you finished writing the thing, there was an almost equal amount of effort required to get it printed and submitted with an almost Masonic level of secrecy. You had to print at least two copies, and the printer would inevitably jam halfway through printing the second. These days it's all gone digital, with these e-tendering portals that make it feel like filling in a tax return. Another task that leaves you feeling sore.
Bluff have been experimenting with this for quite a while now, because they were thinking, you know, we're not the kind of agency that just puts up another banner in a store or another panel or another picture. We want to do things that people have to engage with, so they have to use their mobile phone. They wanted to create a dialogue through things like augmented reality holograms, where, you know, because stores need to get information. You can't get information yet unless you're getting people to log in to access some information. You know, and you need to create a dialogue. to activate, you know, who's asking questions about us, who are they, where were they. Creating in-store theatre through 5G means you can do that.
We've all learned over the last few months that the only thing we can rely on is change. This is especially relevant in the world of marketing and branding, which has been forced to adapt at lightning speed to changes in customer behaviour. This episode, we catch up with Bill Walsgrove, who, apart from being an incredibly prominent figure in the world of design and branding and still celebrating Arsenal's FA Cup win, has been at the forefront of urban cool with Studio Blup, and he's got some very exciting news to break on our show that's going to have a huge impact on the marketing world. Normally, I would have taken my sweet time to get this podcast out, but in the true spirit of Sixth Estate Publishing, here's me talking to Bill about some really exciting news that I hope you'll all be keen to hear. In January, the world of marketing and branding was busy lamenting the familiar issue of the slow death of the high street. The obvious villains of fast fashion, mass imports, high rents, online retailers were getting the expected barrage of abuse from the terraces, and largely, we carried on like it was business as usual. Then someone mentioned a pandemic and all hell broke loose. We all know what happened in the ensuing 5 months. True to this podcast North Star, we wanted to bring you perspectives that will help you in the world of sales and new business navigate this strange new territory. And if you or your clients have been operating in the retail industry, unless your client's Amazon right now, you're probably feeling a bit like your suit is two sizes too big. But it's not all doom and gloom, my friends. There are some interesting opportunities, and it's just a question of perspective, because for every sad tale you hear of retail, I'll show you a positive one. And I wanted to focus on one such positive story, that of a fellow called Jonathan Wilkins, better known as Dines, who runs one of the coolest brand, design, and digital agencies in the country called Studio Blup. That's B-L-U-P. Blup's output mixes culture, design, and technology to help brands speak to youth audiences, and its work is in demand from some of the biggest brands in the world, such as Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Marc Jacobs, EA Sports, and Sony Music. Now, I'm not an expert in youth marketing, but I do love a challenge, and I can tell you when an agency has tapped into the zeitgeist, and that's Studio Blup. Added to this, the agency has just announced some major, major news, which is exclusive to this podcast. So here's one of the agency's non-executive directors, Bill Walsgrove, who's been described by the achingly hip founder of Blup, Dines, as a true visionary himself, and he's going to tell us what's happened, and later also hopefully share some biz dev gold to help you in your new business prospecting. So welcome, Bill.
Hi there. Hi, how are you, Keith?
I'm very well, thanks very much. And everybody okay down on your way?
Yeah, obviously the lovely thing about Brighton is it's a creative community anyway, which is great for sort of networking and collaboration. But a lot of people here are kind of, dare I say, refugees from London. They've moved down here deliberately because they want to do more working from home. So I don't think the impact has been as difficult here as it has been in other parts of the country.
And plus, you've also got the nice coastline to look at as well.
Plus, it means we were swimming this morning before writing the first proposal.
Fantastic. Now, before we go about establishing Studio Blup's creds, can you tell us, basically, before you go about telling us what the exciting news is, I just wanted to give the listeners kind of a quick overview of kind of where you came from, your sort of long and prestigious career, because you've run the board of many agencies, haven't you? I mean, CPB, Future Brand, Leo Burnett,
yeah,
etc. How did that all start?
Well, I mean, it's weird. I think I had a passion for comic books when I was in my early teens.
Right.
And I was always drawing cartoons and was passionate about thinking I was going to work in advertising. So I just kind of carried on drawing cartoons and ended up in art school. And when I was at art school, I thought, well, I ought to do graphic design because it seems like it's an up-and-coming thing to do. So I graduated in graphic design from the London College of Printing, which is now the London College of Communication, and went into an advertising agency. And after about 3 months, realized I hated it and thought, God, this is a terrible decision I've made. But a friend of mine said, well, you should be working more in branding. And that was a new word to me. And when I started researching it, this is pre-Google, the agencies who were focusing on branding were packaging agencies.
Right.
And I managed to land a job in one of the early pioneers of branded packaging, which was Curly Porter Bell. I worked my way up through the ranks and became a creative director there, and a part partner when we then sold ourselves on to WPP. And wow. I can remember my father at the time saying, you know, going to art school is a waste of time because you'll end up, you know, it's all about girls and drugs and rock and roll, which, thanks, Dad, you've just sold it to me. Then when I got a job in branding and he saw that I was in an agency that sold itself, he said, oh, son, you may have struck a rich seam here. I then left Curly Porter Bell and started my own agency, a company called Planet. And we grew over a period of about, we were doing new product development. We grew over a period of about 7 or 8 years and sold ourselves to Interpublic, the McCann Erickson Group. So weirdly, I ended up back in an advertising group.
Right.
And that company, Planet, was merged into Future Brands. And I became the creative director of Future Brand here in the UK.
Good Lord.
But after I'd worked my service through Future Brand, I then realized that I never wanted to work for anyone ever again. The thing is, once you've started your own company, you can't go back to being an employee. Or, in my case, you become unemployable. So if you let me continue the story very quickly,
sure.
I've gone through various guises of starting, growing, and changing several other companies, a company called Big Idea, a company called Brand Voice, until I finally decided, as my hair was getting grayer and my decision to work fewer hours, that I should become an independent brand consultant. And that's where I am now. But what happened is, whilst I was becoming a brand consultant, I was working with lots of other companies and also working within a network of lots of other companies. And I stumbled across Studio Blob, and there starts another story.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, we'll come on to that in a second. But I mean, just sort of circling back onto that before we do. I mean, through all these, I mean, you've just listed probably, you know, a bunch of the leading agencies in the country for sure, if not in the world. I mean, what do you think has been kind of the secret to your success? I mean, what's kind of driven you through all this? Because it can be quite a sort of a cruel and quite brutal world sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing that parents often ask themselves about their children. Are they the products of nature or nurture? And I think a bit of it is both. And I think I've been lucky in my timing. And I think also some of that serendipity has happened with the growth of the whole brand world, dare I say, really in the late 80s and 90s. So the whole growth of strategic design in the 90s in particular, where branding now became, you know, branding appeared on the balance sheet. I was very lucky to be part of that boom because branding was starting to be taken seriously. Before, I think a lot of people thought of a brand was just a logo. And of course, that's naive. A brand is much more than a logo. You know, a brand has value, which I'll explain. But I think that having started out as a designer, I then became more interested in actually brand purpose. It's not just what a brand looks like. It's what a brand believes and what it does and what it achieves.
Right.
So I think that it was lucky timing, but also I think I was a designer who probably wasn't as good as some of my peers. So I found myself in this position of becoming a creative director because I was better at selling design than I probably was at doing it.
Well, it's I mean that is an important part of it, I think, because and it's interesting what you just said about you know the position of a brand and sort of what it stands for, because you know for many years the word sort of brands had a kind of a fuzziness or a wooliness to it. And I interviewed recently a chap called Stephen Chiliotis of the Center for Brand Analysis, the TCBA, who are the company behind the Cool Brands and Super Brands charts. And his definition of brand was that it's more reputation. which I have to say is a very sort of beautifully simple definition of the term. But it does almost kind of invade the sort of PR industry's waters, sort of more than the design industry when you look at it like that. And like, I mean, he quoted Martin Neumeyer, who said that, you know, a brand is kind of more of a gut feel than a look. I mean, is that kind of how you see this?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about working on brands is when you start working on brands that you really believe in, you become quite passionate about them. And that's mm-hmm. because you believe in their promise. And certainly some of the brands that I've been very lucky to work with, you know, everything from Liberty to the Tate Gallery to Benetton, have just been great brands that have had a great story, a truth, a belief, a value system. Mm-hmm. And I think as somebody who's interested as much about design as being a tool, I became interested in about how use that tool in defining how a brand communicates to a target consumer. In other words, how do you get that promise over? And I think that, you know, the great thing is I do brand workshops all the time, and sometimes you get a financial director in a brand workshop. I'm sorry for all you financial directors out there, but they usually say, oh, I don't believe in branding. You know, I don't believe in branding, and I'm not persuaded by branding. And you go, okay, what car do you buy? You know, do you drive? And they'll go, right, a Volvo. Why do you drive it? Oh, okay, it's a safe car. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that because you know about the engineering or believe in the brand? And people sit back, you know, or I drive this car because it's superb engineering, or I drive this car because it's comfort. You know, the thing is people are persuaded. People begin to personify brands.
Yes.
And begin to put value, humanity into brands. So I think brands are all about a purpose and a promise. So yes, reputation then is about how you spread that purpose and promise.
That's fantastic, because I was actually going to. I read yesterday while I was sort of thinking about this, and Abraham Lincoln once said, and I'm going to paraphrase him here in sort of a brand context, but character, or in this case, a product, is like a tree, and reputation, brand, is like a shadow, and the shadow is what we think of it, and the tree is the real thing. And that's pretty much kind of, you know, sort of along those lines, isn't it? That you have one and you can't have one without the other.
Exactly. I mean, the interesting thing about branding is obviously branding is a tool of communication. When you're trying to communicate something, it's very important that you're saying it in a coherent and engaging way. And the people that you're trying to engage listen and understand. If they don't understand, you haven't done your job. Branding is about having a conversation. It's about engaging with people. And sometimes people get it very wrong. They plant a tree, but the shadow doesn't work. And more, of course, the thing, and we'll come on to blow up, it's not now about what companies tell you about their brand. It's about what other people you follow say about that brand. In other words, more and more, it's about the disciples and the followers. It's not about the brand itself. People actually aren't believing some of the old tools of branding that have been used, which is the straightforward, you know, selling. It's much more about inviting people in rather than telling them what you do. There's the push and pull is changing.
Just onto Studio Blup and this chap Dines, who I'm dying to find out a little bit more about. But first off, the Studio Blup website, it's bonkers. And if I think it's bonkers, it makes absolute sense to its target market. And because you see so many kind of websites that are to sort of try and be all Eufy and, you know, sort of massive failure. But I mean, this website is like a cocktail of street cool. And you told me it's actually going to be changed and updated, which now brings me on to the special news that you'd like to share. So I don't want to spoil it. So go right ahead. What's the news?
I'll tell you two things, is that actually their website isn't particularly important to them. The most important thing to Blup is probably their Instagram page.
Okay.
Far more people follow and engage with Blup through Instagram than through their website. You know, the website is there, but I don't think it's a key selling point. However, the website is changing because Blup is changing. Blup has now merged with the Lab Group, which is the big news you're talking about. And the Lab Group are a very clever company who are, you know, combining creativity and consumer neuroscience in the digital world. And Studio Blup have become part of them. They're not absorbed into them. They're still semi-independent, but right, they're a creative outlet with Lab Group.
Okay, so it's a merger. It's not an acquisition or a JV or anything else like that.
I won't tell you the business details. It's not the purpose of it. But really, the purpose of the internal machinations are nothing to do with obviously the what it means. What it means is Lab, who are a really clever company, have got a really bright creative studio within their midst. And their creativity was fine, but this is it's like signing a great centre forward when you've already got a good midfield.
It's something that Arsenal could never boast of. But
don't go there.
Well, that's Johnny Tews, the CEO at Lab Group. I mean, he's a fascinating fellow because, I mean, you mentioned it sort of just there or alluded to it, because he's come at the agency world from a very kind of technical sort of direction and very into kind of shopper habits and the sort of psychology of selling and the psychology of branding and stuff like that. I mean, this must be very, very exciting to sort of be working with that kind of fan base behind you.
Well, I think the thing that's, Alex Evans, who's the managing director of Blup, has actually been working. Johnny has been a mentor. Johnny Tews has been a mentor to Alex to help him understand more about the role of being a managing director. And obviously, the more Johnny understood how brilliant Studio Blup were, he said, "You just got to be part of us." So it's evolved out of
very organic
to obviously emerge. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the same way that I've been a mentor to Dines.
That's what, I was going to ask you. How did you get together with Dines in the first place?
Oh, that's a great story. It's been retold, but I'll do it again because it gets more interesting. I was working with a mutual client, and the client told me that they found this great studio who'd done a new website for them.
Right.
And the website was fantastic. I didn't think much of the client's business, it was a sort of networking business. But right, I thought the website were great. I said, you know, could I meet the guys? And they said, yeah, they're up in Islington. You know, here's Johnny, he's the creator. Go meet him. Gave Johnny a call. Went up to Islington, met up with Johnny, and we just hit it off straight away.
Right.
It was, he is a big, big character. And you mentioned the mighty Arsenal. Well, the fact that we're both passionate Arsenal fans and season ticket holders kind of sealed the deal. but the real reason I got on with them, I said, I love your creative product, but I don't understand your strategy or your purpose as a brand. And it was lucky for me that Diane said at the time, well, we'd like some help on that. And I said, well, I'd love to help you. I'd love to get involved. And to enlarge the football analogy, because remember, a business partner of mine at the time said, why are you getting involved with these kids? And I had to give them the Alex Ferguson story. I said, you know, well, remember when they said you couldn't win in the league with kids? Well, I think these kids have a future.
Wow.
And they certainly did. So I've been a non-exec and I've been consulting with them for 6 years now. They're over 7 years old. And they've just accelerated. The fact that they've done so many things from sort of initial illustrated content for social media into animation, video, augmented reality. They've launched their own line of clothes, which they've been very successful online and with the Grime community. Grime is a music form, if you didn't know that, Keith.
Oh, man. I know you've just blown one of my questions I was going to ask you later. But, the fascinating thing about this Dines is that he seems to be a very instinctive sort of design. It seems to come very, very natural to him.
Yeah. The thing about Dines is that his background was as a when he was an art student, was also as a graffiti artist. And that's where the origin of the word Blup comes from. But I'll let Johnny tell you that when you speak to him. Is that graffiti has influenced a lot of the way they work. So a lot of it is about... what I think, because I also DJ as well, I think their art is like the art of the remix. What they do is they borrow bits from places and put them together in new and unique ways, a bit like DJs pick samples and beats. So their art is very much like the art of the remix.
You see, this is this all comes back to another show that we did recently on the art of being creative, and one of the guys we spoke to said that you know, sort of one of the elements of being creative is the ability to juxtapose things and to put odd things together and to make them work. And that is very much so, obviously, just touches on what you just said.
It's the genius of Dines is that I think he's always said that he has, you know, having his ability to have his foot in the street and his head in the clouds and to absorb both parts is a really great way of working.
That's fantastic. I love it. Love it. Well, I mean, I said at the start of the show that the retail industry was currently kind of staggering around like George Foreman in the eighth round. But I kind of get the feeling that certain design agencies are looking at what's going on as a kind of a bit of a major kind of evolutionary event. I mean, what's Blupp's take on the world of retail at the moment?
Well, I think, you know, this is partly my view and partly Blupp's view, is that obviously, they've been surfing a good wave anyway, because more and more sales have been moving to online and out of real stores, as it were. And if anything, this situation of COVID has accelerated that process. You know, you've got to look at Amazon's profits have doubled in the last year to 5.2 billion.
That's crazy, crazy money.
You know, Jeff Bezos, he's probably made another billion whilst you and I have been talking, you know. Hey, Jeff, can you lend me some? Anyway, that's another point.
Shout out to Jeff.
Yeah, big up, Jeff. But anyway, I think that the fact that they've been creating, most of what they do is create social content. So GIFs, animations, illustrations and stuff, which is used on social media. Hence why I said to you earlier, their website's not the important portal for them.
No.
The important portal is Instagram. Most of their new business comes from people going, I love your Instagram galleries. I love that animation. You know,
yeah.
And they combine things which combine senses. So they've got animation, music, they've moved into holograms, they've moved into augmented reality in store. I mean, they would say that they're creating the content which the future of online retail needs. And therefore, again, it's serendipity, good timing for them. But I think that... I don't know. I think the future for retail is difficult unless retailers begin to realize that maybe they've got to turn their stores into theater, but make the selling happen online. I'm not sure the place where you sell and the place you go has to be the same thing. And obviously this is what's happening to places like Apple. You know, if you go into an Apple store, it feels like you're going into an Apple theater.
Yes,
not necessarily
sure.
Going for an Apple purchase.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that that you said that, because again, I had a chat with actually a fellow Gooner, a fellow called Gordon Lee, who's of the at the time at the GSMA, which runs the Mobile World Congress, and he's incredibly passionate about the possibilities that 5G is going to bring to retail. I mean, you touched on the holograms and things like that. I mean, what advantages does it offer you guys?
Well, you know, the great thing is, you know, Blupp have been experimenting with this for quite a while now, because they were thinking, you know, we're not the kind of agency that just puts up another banner in a store or another panel or another picture. We want to do things that people have to engage with. So they have to use their mobile phone. So they wanted to create a dialogue through things like augmented reality holograms, where, you know, because stores need to get information. You can't get information yet unless you're getting people to log in to access some information. You know, you need to create a dialogue to activate, you know, who's asking questions about us, who are they, where are they, where were they. Creating in-store theatre through 5G means you can do that.
That's fantastic. And I mean, obviously, you know, it's... there is a big shakeup going on at the moment. I mean, there's, you know, it's not all, you know, it's some horrendous news going on right now at the moment in the world of retail. But I mean, generally, obviously trying to look forward. I mean, are you guys sort of excited by the fact that through this shakeup, we might actually see some new sort of challenger brands emerging as sort of major brands? I mean, have you got any tips for any favorites coming through?
Well, let me tell you the story, which I think one of my favorites is Bluff. I'll tell you why. As an aside, as well as Johnny being a goon and a great bloke, he's also got a passion for fashion. So Bluff themselves have been doing their own clothing line for a couple of years now. T-shirts, hoodies, accessories, stuff like that.
Right.
Which they sold online through the Bluff shop. And then they experimented late last year with doing a pop-up shop in Soho. So they moved from doing online retail to real retail to see how it would go. And the stuff sold out immediately. And it's been so successful that, in fact, a major London retailer has approached them to put their line in store. So that's like...
You say a major. Can you give us a clue?
No.
Okay.
Because otherwise...
Check notes.
Otherwise, you know, I'm writing the press release as we speak. I'm not giving it away.
All right, fair enough. I understand. But so the clothing lines and stuff like that, I mean, that's quite an interesting angle to take. I mean, because there's been, you know, quite a few attempts to go into that. I mean, do you think that that Blup has the kind of creds to pull this off? I mean, is that the kind of, you know, sort of expectation here?
Well, no, I don't think it's ever going to be the major source of income. What it's about is it's a bit like if you create an interesting range, you might well have future conversations about brand licensing.
Right.
Brand licensing changes the whole thing for everyone, but that's a future ambition. It's not not for now.
Right.
No, I think what's interesting is having come from very much a digital and social media background to then become a creator of products to sell in store means that they've got a bridge across both camps. They can see the dynamics of both what works online and what works in store.
I guess, yeah. And that obviously gives you some kind of hands-on experience on what it's like from the actual, you know, the vending end of things rather than just the manufacturing side of it.
I mean, the clever thing about Blup's clothing and accessories is Blup have done a lot of work with, as I say, the grime music community, and a lot of the players there, players, is that with a Z? The players. I'm putting up my hands now.
Here we go again.
You know, yeah, they liked the Blup items and wore them and, you know, were given them. And that meant product placement. So
right.
Blup know the art of tricks, to use a terrible pun.
Yes. Okay. Well, talking of, you know, sort of channels and stuff like that. I mean, the world of viral marketing, and it's a term I personally hate. What, in your view, makes the difference between a brand that catches fire, kind of, you know, like cottonwood in the grass, and something that just burns like a disused tire pile?
I think all the old tricks. The interesting thing now is certainly when I was sort of in the 90s and early noughties, I think brand owners knew where to go to get the creative services they need. They had their advertising agency to do one thing, their PR agency to do another thing, their design agency to do another thing,
sure,
their in-store activation, you know. But I think it's become grey lines between all of those because certainly there are some brands, I'd say, why on earth are you advertising? You know, what you need to do is get your products in front of influencers. You need to get those kids in YouTube talking about it. You need to be thinking about different approaches. It's just the channels are changing all the time.
Yes.
And certainly in certain areas, you know, brands just can't sell direct anymore. They've got to sell via people who are respected by other people.
And talking of which, I mean, that which brings us on to the world of influencers and in the marketing world. I mean, does Blup get involved in working with influencers? And one of the other things as well, to a double-headed question here, but are you aware of the sort of the risk that certain influencers have on brands as well? I mean, you know, is that something that kind of you're cognizant of?
I'll declare this is where my knowledge gap, you know, this is where my grey hairs. I'm a great brand consultant. Sometimes I'm not, my feet aren't as much on the ground. That's certainly a great question for Johnny, for Dines.
Right.
But certainly they have relationships with influencers, and they certainly have, you know, influencers have just loved their work and promoted them without Blup having to put it in front of them. I think sometimes you have to develop them and sometimes you have to be found by them.
Right.
Can't force feed it.
No, exactly, and I mean it's obviously a something that that would benefit hugely. I mean, you know, it seems that that Blup are kind of you know, perfect for the kind of influencer market. But as you say, I mean, they're on top of that. But I mean, the agency itself has been kind of bucking the trend, or you know, the sort of current trend in the market at the moment, by actually winning quite a bit of business, and some of which I kind of name checked at the top of the show. I mean, was the sort of the accounts that we mentioned, I mean, you know, were they already kind of in the pipeline pre-COVID, or has this actually been won under lockdown?
Well, like all new business, it comes out of, I mean, the best new business comes out of recommendation,
right,
or discovery. You know, the worst kind of new business is trying to directly sell. The hard sell doesn't work anymore. So I think they've been approached by people, and people have discovered them, particularly through their social media. I'd say their Instagram is key to their success. And some of it has been slow burn before COVID, and some of it has happened with accelerating into requiring social content, particularly for online retailers during this crisis.
So, I mean, it's not really, it doesn't seem to have stopped them in their tracks at all.
No, because it's a bit like, you know, you asked me earlier why I'm in Brighton. I'm in Brighton because I've been working, you know, I moved here to work from home. I think, and that was serendipity for me. I think the serendipity for Blup is they've been passionate about social media platforms. They know how to use them. And they've set their agency stall by being an agency that creates content for social media. And, you know, these social media platforms are critical to online retail.
Yeah.
So the timing for them is...
Well, it's interesting, actually. I'm going to bring up an even older head for us, which is Mary Portis. And, you know, she's constantly talking about the high street. And brands, she said recently, which I thought was very interesting. She had a very good point about the fact that brands kind of need to identify with their audience in a way that they've never had to before. And so, you know, it's very cause driven, and it's not like, you know, your kind of autumn winter sort of season and your summer spring summer season in fashion anymore. There's very much a kind of a, you know, it's about what causes they're behind, and, you know, and how they're sort of being visible, you know, to their audience. I mean, do you think that kind of the wins that Blup have seen, apart from their incredible talent, but some of that has been down to the kind of changing sort of nature of consumer purchasing habits?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've had this conversation about, it'd be interesting if Blup did a website called Blup Recommends Other People's Products, how successful might that be? But we're sort of part joking because we're too busy doing our own stuff. But there is a thing where, you know, if people like the cut of your jib, then if you're also praising other things which are part of that whole sort of palette, then, you know, it's if you like somebody's taste in music and their taste in art and their taste in home decor, and I just think the lines are blurred.
And it's very much like, I mean, like you say, you know, if you go around to, you know, sort of somebody's house or whatever, those are the best salespeople, and you like their furniture or you like the food that they're cooking or whatever, those usually are the best kind of recommendations. So it's become very cultural now. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, no longer... You know, basically, you know, no longer do we have to kind of just sit and watch a TV ad to find out what's available in the high street. I mean, you know, we're very much reliant on what other people are telling us. So very interesting. Now, obviously, talking of migrating marketing budgets, onto another subject now, because Chester King, who's the CEO of the British Esports Association, was recently in the press urging CMOs to spin their marketing budgets from traditional sports to the esports market. I mean, largely because it was all kind of crickets and tumbleweed in the stands, but partying like Generation Z Wildchild in esports. I mean, is Blup getting into the esports area with any kind of campaigns?
It's not the focus of what they've been doing, but certainly because of that. I mean, they've done lots of work with, you know, they did work with Chelsea because Chelsea had a Nike contract and Nike were a client of Blup. So Yes, a lot of their clients are involved in sport. It's not a particular focus, but it will be part of the conversation.
Right.
Because they're more involved with brands from a sport apparel than the actual sports themselves. But that's slowly changing.
Right. Okay. Well, here's me with my my reference on grime now, just to show that I do actually understand what it is and where it comes from. Was that I was thinking about the US market and whether Blupp had any kind of intentions to go in there and do a bit of grime on the American sort of hip hop design scene. I mean, it had some sort of British street cool to American brands. Is there any plans for movement in the USA?
Well, I mean, obviously, the first international step is becoming part of the lab group, because right. that gives them more international reach. The US one's different question, I think. I mean, because the weird thing is, of course, when you think about the American hip-hop market, is some of the most successful hip-hop artists have become retailers of clothes, perfume, headphones. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are hugely entrepreneurial in their own right. I think it's trying to tackle the USA head on would be a fascinating challenge. But, you know, it's there's no doubt that we've been approached by American brands.
Fantastic. Well, that's good news as well. So, okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and see what's going on. Now we're on the kind of parade lap of the show, and so what does Bill like to do to kick back and relax? Because obviously, being on the South Coast, I mean, does relaxing involve walking along the beaches and taking in the sea air?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting thing is I got involved with a new partner several years ago. And I'd been a cat lover all my life. You know, I despised the whole idea of walking a dog. You know, everyone said to me, you know, a dog is a man's best friend. And I thought, I've never, ever taken a friend out for a walk and picked up his shit. You know, to me, that was not what Best Friends was about. However,
fantastic.
Weirdly, particularly during lockdown, she's got two dachshunds. And I just love walking these dogs. You know, we walk them on the downs, we walk them on the beaches, we walk them in national parks.
Well, they don't walk very fast, do they, dachshunds, really?
Well, no, because Marissa's got her watch, which tells her how many steps she's taken. And with their little legs, we realise if she's done 10,000 steps, they've done 40,000.
Oh, dear. Poor fantastic. I know. They already look like their legs are worn down anyway.
Well, I get it, speed of sound. But no, the joy of being here and part of the, you know, much as I love London, and I really, really miss the fact I haven't been up to London for now 5 months, which is now, having lived there for 30 years, it feels like a loss. I'm going to return very soon. But so I've been doing all my work in London virtually, you know, on Zoom calls like this. But certainly being down at Brighton means you've got the sea to the south of you, you've got the beautiful downs and national parks north. It's been beautiful. And so a lot of exercise, swimming, all that kind of stuff. But also, I'm passionate about music and reading and stuff like that. So, I'm a sort of bedroom DJ, even in this golden years of mine.
Lovely.
And there's a lot of DJs down here. So following
what,
music.
What kind of DJ are we talking here? Are we talking like, you know, sort of hands in the air, or are we talking this one goes out to all you truckers out there?
No, neither of those. Nor a hospital DJ. No. No, merely DJing for myself first and friends. So the odd pub gig or whatever, or the odd party. But mainly I do mixes, which I send out online, which people follow. I'm a massive vinyl collector.
Okay, well that's always good. I've always found that it's always been a great judge of a person is that when you know sort of back in the day you used to be able to go around someone's house and leaf through their record collection and you'd always get a good idea of their personality just by doing that. But it doesn't really work the same with a Spotify playlist, does it?
No, but I mean some of the things I've discovered, you know, just listening to more music online as I had more time. One of the great tracks, just go and find it if you can. It's called Golden Brown by Dave Brubeck. Now, you'd say to yourself, okay, Golden Brown, that's by the Stranglers, and Dave Brubeck's been dead for 10 years. What's that about? And it's this clever guy called Lawrence Marsden who's done a mix which has suddenly got millions of hits on YouTube, where he's taken a sample of Take 5, which is one of the great jazz tracks, And obviously, in honour of the great keyboards player, The Strangler, who died recently, Dave, he's mixed Golden Brown with Take 5, and it's got a huge amount of hits. Ooh. So many hits, it's now being released as a record. A record company approached him and said, you've got to release this on vinyl. My top 10 for the moment is Golden Brown by Dave Brubeck.
Well, that's interesting to know. That's great. And I mean, talking of which, I mean, I did ask you to prepare. Is that going to be your nomination for our mixtape?
I'll give you another nomination, actually, if you want.
Go on, then.
My big nomination, I guess, is, do you like Kraftwerk?
Oh, man. Yeah, we were talking about them the other day. Yes.
Kraftwerk are, you know, the ultimate band. They're the electronic pioneers, the godfathers of all the music I've loved, you know, through dance music, techno, electronica, all that kind of stuff. And there's been a new version of Computer Love, which is one of the great tracks.
Okay.
Which is called the Los Chicos Altos remix. And essentially, it's a jazz riff on guitar of Computer Love. It's just sublime.
Fantastic. Well, I shall check that one out as well. Funnily enough, you mentioned that. I was, and the Kraftwerk thing, just to prove that I have got my electronica, I was listening to Brian Eno's Music for Airports the other day.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I mean, he's one of my heroes.
Yeah.
For all sorts of reasons. You know that he has synesthesia. It's where when you see a colour, you hear a sound, and where you hear a sound, you see a colour.
I was trying to think of what it was. Yes, okay, that's fantastic. That's an amazing thing.
He's not just done great ambient music, and obviously he was part of Roxy Music, who are just, again, heroes of mine, but he's combined his ambient music with actually creating fantastic digital art. So he's followed that whole sound and vision thing, which he and David Bowie were following.
Yes. So, okay, well, that's your Desert Island Disc. Have you any good books you'd recommend? I think you referenced one earlier.
Yeah, I mean, the book that I went back to read was actually, because it was very interesting, I read it at Christmas when I was away in Spain, is The Body by Bill Bryson. And Bill Bryson's just great, great writer about travel. But he's brilliant about writing things about things he doesn't know anything about. So essentially, he's interviewing people in medicine and science about the human body, because he wants to know. So he's trying to travel around the human body. And of course, the great thing about rereading it is he's got a whole chapter which is all about diseases. And if you go into that chapter, he then says, you know, at the end of that chapter about diseases, that, you know, is that the reason we haven't had another experience like this isn't because we've been especially vigilant, it's because we've been lucky.
Yeah.
So his whole thing about diseases and viruses is, you know, and particularly when you just heard that bubonic plague has broken out in Africa, you know, I hope this isn't just the starter act and the main acts to follow.
Yes,
sorry, that's indeed a bad joke.
Oh, dear. But, okay, all right. So that's great. Thank you very much for that, Bill. And what's on the horizon now for coming back to Blup? Any, apart from obviously the massive news, which I do appreciate you letting us have a discussion about. What's coming up?
Well, the point is that Blup is only one feather in my cap. I also do work here in Brighton for a company called New Juice, who are a very clever creative consultancy. We do more corporate and business-to-business work. That's ongoing. And I do some work as a consultant for another agency called Personalize, which is all about social listening. And I've just started working with a company called Lingua Brand, which is all about how brands talk, what their tone of voice is. Because just like we were talking about colour in terms of design and sound in terms of design, I'm interested in all the senses that are being used. When you think about design doesn't mean drawing, it means problem solving. Mm-hmm. And you have to engage the senses to solve problems if you want to tap into people's emotions.
Love it. That's fantastic. So you're a busy man then?
Well, I hope so, but still got time to walk the dogs and swim and to celebrate Arsenal winning the FA Cup.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. Fantastic. Well, congratulations, Bill. You made it, mate. That's fantastic. Impeccable timing. And I look forward to a rematch in the not too distant future. And perhaps we can bring on your man Dines to tell us what's what, because he sounds fascinating, and I'd love to have a chat with him.
He's partying away in Ibiza at the moment, but when he's back and he's not quarantined, actually perfect time to speak to him when he's quarantined.
Exactly, I'll get him in lockdown. That'd be fantastic. Well, I have to say, I mean, he is an exceptional talent, and I know that the Blup team is a formidable force in the world of branding, and I hope to hear some more good news from them soon. But it's been great fun talking to you, Bill, and very insightful. Thank you very much. Stay safe. Best luck to everybody, and we'll catch up with you soon. Thank you very much, Bill.
Yeah, and thank you, Keith. I think this is great what you're doing. I think podcasts are certainly one of the things which I've really enjoyed, and this is one of the channels which is worth people listening to.
Oh, that's very kind of you. I appreciate that. Will you take care of yourself, Bill? Speak to you soon.
See you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And there it is. Some good news. Some great news, in fact, which always makes a nice change. We wish Bill, Johnny, Dines and Alex the very best with this chapter in their evolution. The timing actually couldn't be any better. My thanks to Donna on the mixing desk, Matt on the keyboard, Peter Banks and Barney for the tunes, but mostly thanks to our lovely listeners who have helped make the Fuel podcast the number one new business show. Join us next time on the Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be entertaining you with songs and sketches and jokes old and new, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?